I don't get to make it out to Queens all that often, so I'm very thankful when I do get to get the opportunity to come here. Queens has the best food. Queens definitely has the best food, so I love coming to Queens to eat. By the way, I'm also more dressed up than usual, and it's partially because of you, but partially because at my church we're going to ordain an elder this evening, and so I'm a little dressed up for that. But what I thought I would share with you today is just kind of a general message that I think is important for all of us to be reminded of, and that's the importance of being welcoming. And before we look at this passage, let me just kind of say a brief comment about welcoming. I don't think we can underestimate the importance of being a welcoming people, especially as a Christian community, because there are many different types of people who you may find make their way through the pews here. Some people may be Christian, but other people may not be Christian. Some people may have been former Christians who have fallen away and are kind of just trying to reconnect and looking for a place to get plugged into. And for any of those kinds of people, and for somebody who hasn't been part of this community, being new can be very intimidating. And for a Christian, visiting a new church can be very intimidating. And if you've been at this church for a while, then sometimes it's easy to forget what it's like to be new. I might suggest maybe in the evening or something, you should just visit a church by yourself just to kind of experience what it's like to be the new person again. But being new is very difficult. And if you add on to that, somebody who may not be a Christian, kind of sitting in the pews and going through the worship service can be a very foreign experience. And I think part of what we need to do as a community to live out the gospel, but to also be a good and powerful testimony to who Jesus is and what he has done, I think we have to be a welcoming people. So, certainly if you visit my church, if it's a good day, maybe you'll feel welcomed. But maybe if it's not, I'm sure many people come through and they're kind of like, yeah, I don't feel like I quite fit in, I quite belong. And I think this is something that maybe we all struggle with. So what I want to do today is I want to talk about this topic of welcoming, and I think Paul talks about it in this passage. Now, let me also say this. When I was in college, and as mentioned, I went to Rutgers in New Jersey. I'm from New Jersey. When I was in college, a freshman in college, I actually had no friends. And anybody here like that? No? Good for you. I guess just me. Well, I didn't really have any friends when I was a freshman in college. And I was a relatively new Christian at that point, and I never had any Christian friends before. And even though I was an Asian, I didn't grow up in a town with a lot of Asians, so I didn't have any Asian friends either. And yet, for some strange reason, when I went to college, I found myself, and I'm a Korean American, so I found myself in this little Christian fellowship on campus called Korean Christian Fellowship. And honestly, even though I'm Korean, and even though I was a Christian, I did not fit in with these people at all. I was kind of quiet. I was kind of the type that I didn't really share the same kind of sense of humor. And I don't know if you know any Korean Americans, but sometimes their humor is a little weird. And they would laugh at these things, and I wouldn't find them funny at all. And I would kind of say, what is so funny, right? At the time, if you're my age, there was an era in the world where Counter-Strike was this like huge, big phenomenon. And everybody in the dorm room would play Counter-Strike except me. I didn't find this game to be all that fun because I kept dying after like 5 seconds. And I said, what is fun about this? So I couldn't connect to people even on that level. And because I was a relatively new Christian, there was a bunch of people in the Christian fellowship, and they knew each other from going to revivals. They knew each other from going to different retreats. And they all connected, and it seemed like everybody else knew each other. And I knew nobody, and the lingo that they were talking about, even like the emotions that they felt in revivals, even the way that they worshipped was so foreign to me, and I said, I don't really know if I fit in. But here's the thing. I think my faith was genuine, and God had really done something to my heart, so I really wanted to grow and to know Christ. I knew it was important to have Christian friends, and even though I never had any Asian friends growing up, there was a part of me that also felt out of place When I had a lot of white and black friends growing up, there was a part of me that didn't quite fit in there either. So I was having some identity issues, like, you know, who am I? Who am I? I got to figure out who I am. And I did a lot of this in college. But for 4 years, I stayed in that fellowship, even though I didn't fit in, even though I didn't have any friends, I would say for freshman and sophomore year. But you know what happened junior year is I got elected to be one of the leaders of the fellowship, and that's when I was like, okay, I need to make some friends in this fellowship, and that's when I started to become great friends with people. But if you ask me, why did I stay there? And it's just a very simple reason. Even though I felt like I didn't fit in, there was just one person there who really welcomed me. There was one person there who called me out and said, hey, you want to go to the dining hall and eat? And we just ate one-on-one. There was one person that just personally said, hey, you know, there's this retreat going on. Do you want to come to this retreat? And, being invited to something is kind of cool. And especially when you have no friends, you really want to be invited to things. And it had such a profound impact upon not just my life in college, but even upon my faith, because God really used that time and that fellowship to really grow my faith. I think that's really important for a Christian community to understand, the importance of being a welcoming people and being a welcoming community. But here's the thing. I think many times we struggle with welcoming. Why? You know, I think on the surface, we might say, well, I haven't seen my friends for a whole week and I only get to see them on Sunday. So I want to go talk to my friends and I want to catch up. Maybe some people have like cute kids or cute babies, so you kind of gravitate towards them and you wanna play with them. And babies are cute and stuff, but they don't need you to welcome them. Right? Other people probably need your welcome more. But you know, I think the deeper heart issue of why it's so hard for us to welcome people is actually this: to welcome people requires us to make an adjustment to others. It means that we have to do that which is oftentimes uncomfortable to us. It means that we are the ones who have to put ourselves out there, and when we do that, sometimes we get rejected. And if a person is very different from us, then sometimes it means this, that we have to endure those kind of awkward moments that we don't feel comfortable in, and we have to be the ones to kind of initiate and search for something to talk about. And in our minds, there are probably those kinds of people that we automatically click with and those people that we just kind of get along with. And it's just so easy to talk to and to relate to. And for some of us, maybe we're okay just kind of relating to those kinds of people because it doesn't make us uncomfortable. And it doesn't put us in a position where we have to actually adjust ourselves. But you see, as we look at this passage, one of the things that we're going to see the Apostle Paul say in the book of Romans is this: welcome one another as Christ has welcomed you. And so it seems that there is this correlation in terms of how we welcome others with how Jesus welcomed us. And in this way, how we welcome people into this community is going to have a direct correlation, I think, in terms of whether people can tangibly see and experience the gospel being lived out in this community. So as we look at this passage, I basically want to ask three things. First thing I want to ask is, what does it actually mean to be welcoming? Second, who has the obligation to welcome? And finally, how can we actually become a welcoming people? So those three questions. Now first, what does it mean to be welcoming? I think when we think about what it means to be welcoming, maybe we think, well, we just have to kind of be polite people. Maybe we think, well, I just have to say hi to someone. But you see, when Paul talks about welcoming one another, he's actually talking more about simply just saying hi to someone. You know, if you look at verses 14:1 and 15:7, there is this Greek word there that's translated as welcome. But if you look at other English translations, they might translate it as accept. This Greek word, it's a word that is supposed to mean you receive or accept somebody into one's society, into one's home, or into one circle of acquaintances. And so when we think of being a welcoming people, we're not simply thinking about what a host at a restaurant does and say, hey, welcome to my restaurant. But we're actually thinking about saying this: welcome to my family. We want to accept you. We want you to be part of this family and to this community. And that's definitely a higher standard and a higher calling of what it actually means to be welcoming. And to receive and to accept someone into your community is not always the easiest thing to do. And maybe on some level, maybe some of us, we come to community and we have these certain level of expectations of what we want our community to be like. And most of us probably want a community where we can meet people, where we can have fun, where we can find social fulfillment. We want a community of people that is comfortable, that maybe people who are like us, whether it's ethnically, whether it's educationally, whether it's socioeconomically, whether it's pertaining to age. And our natural default mentality, I think, is to kind of filter out the people that we feel like don't belong in this ideal conception of community that we have. But you see, if the church does that, that's a big problem. That's a huge problem because it's not consistent with the very message of the gospel that we proclaim to believe in. And it's going to serve as a poor testimony to this gospel. And that's why Paul seems to always be concerned about unity. Unity between Jewish Christians and unity between Gentile Christians. And we even see it here in chapter 15, verses 5 and 6. And he says, "May the God of endurance and encouragement grant you to live in such harmony with one another, in accord with Christ Jesus, that together you may with one voice glorify the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ." Paul here is concerned with unity, even though you Jews and Gentile Christians maybe don't share that much in common. Unity for the sake of the gospel is important. Now, when we read about the church here in Rome, there is this problem between the Jewish Christians and the Gentile Christians, and we're introduced to that problem in chapter 14. And there are those whom Paul considers to be weak in faith, and the weak in faith are described as people who only eat vegetables. And it's not because like being a vegetarian reflects like that you're weak in faith, but it actually has to do with Jewish customs and dietary laws. Because if you're a Jewish person, you're used to following certain dietary restrictions. And what ended up happening in Rome in 49 AD is that Rome banished all Jews. And so as a result, it was probably difficult for a Jewish person to obtain kosher meat, meat that was acceptable to their dietary restrictions. And so what they decided to do is, in order to solve that problem, they would say, okay, if we can't have access to this kosher meat, we just won't eat meat at all. We'll just eat these vegetables. So they refrained from eating meat altogether. But then you have this other group of Christians, these Gentile Christians, and they didn't grow up as Jewish people. They didn't grow up with these Jewish practices. And they're saying this, "Don't you know that the gospel has set us free from these things? Therefore, why are you still practicing these traditions? Why are you following these dietary restrictions?" And these Gentile Christians are despising them for it. And it seems like food is such a strange issue to divide over. Isn't there more important things to divide over? But I think sometimes maybe we underestimate the importance of food. You know, there was an issue concerning food in the Corinthian church, and although the issues were different in that context, it had great implications for their fellowship. If you go on a mission trip to a foreign country, one of the things people will often say is, you know, whatever kind of food you're offered, no matter how exotic, just accept it and just eat it. Right, because it can be very offensive to not eat the food. It kind of can break the fellowship. You don't want to insult people. You don't want to insult their culture. And you don't want to highlight the things that are different from you and from others. And so they say, you know, just eat the food. When I was in seminary, you know, I didn't have a lot of money. And, you know, I went to seminary in Pennsylvania. In Pennsylvania, there's a lot of Wawas. I don't know if you ever heard of Wawa. It's the best thing ever. Too bad it's not up here. But every meal would actually just be Wawa and Wendy's, because Wendy's used to have a 99-cent menu. But I went to a church up here in New Jersey, and you know, a bunch of guys were talking, and they were like, "Oh yeah, this steakhouse in Manhattan in New York City is so good. Let's go, let's go." And you know, everybody's like, "Let's go." And I'm thinking, you know, I don't really have that much money. I can't afford to go to this steakhouse. So I was going to make up some excuse and kind of be like, "Oh yeah, I can't make it on that day." But you know, what was great about that is someone actually had the sensitivity to be like, "Hey, you know, I'm going to pay for you, so don't worry about how much it costs. Just come and join the fellowship." And sometimes we never think about these kind of things. We just kind of make these suggestions of what we want. But sometimes food can actually divide fellowship in a community. And you see, in this Christian community in Rome, there is an issue over food that's apparently causing some conflict in this community. The Gentile Christians, they despise the ones who abstain from meat, while the Jewish Christians are passing judgment on the ones who eat everything. And even though the Jewish Christians have heard and received the gospel, they still feel bound in some sense to these cultural practices, and they're having a hard time letting them go. On the other side, you have people that Paul calls strong. And they don't have the problems that Jewish Christians had because they never actually grew up with those practices. And they don't seem to understand why these Jewish Christians are abstaining from eating meat. And to them, they probably think it's this ridiculous practice. And they begin to fight and to quarrel over this. And it's in this context that Paul is saying, welcome one another. He's saying this, even though you have your differences, even though some people are abstaining from certain food, even though some people are eating whatever they want, welcome these people as Christ has welcomed you. Receive them as God has received you. And what does that mean? Well, according to verse 4, it means this. Don't pass judgment. In 15:1, it means this. Bearing with the failings of others. 15:2, it means this. Build them up. This is what it means to welcome someone into the community of faith. And I think when the world sees different people doing these things and being united, I think it serves as a powerful testimony to the gospel. Now, if you're the skeptical type, I can imagine somebody saying this. Sounds nice, right? But you know, the truth of my experience is I've experienced this kind of acceptance and non-judgment from the world and not from the church. Every time I come to the church, that's exactly what I feel. I feel judged all the time. I don't feel welcomed at all. I feel like there's a spotlight on me and everything that I've done in the past. People are just judging me constantly over it. If I want this kind of welcoming community, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go to the world to find that welcoming community. And, you know, I think there's maybe a sense of truth to that. And there's a sense where it seems like people in the world are more accepting and less judgmental than Christians. We live in a culture that's very tolerant and open-minded, which generally means this, that people can believe what they want and express themselves however they want. And we're not supposed to make judgments. But I would say two things in response to that. You know, the first thing I would say is, you know, I wonder if a community that kind of espouses this ideology of open-mindedness and tolerance would actually be open to somebody who is narrow-minded, right? In other words, if, you know, someone in this very open community said, you know, we welcome everybody, we don't judge anybody, and somebody says, well, I have these very narrow restrictions, and I actually think you should judge people, and I actually think that there's these certain standards in which to live by, I wonder if that community would openly welcome them, right? Because it goes completely against their ideology. I wonder if they would say, okay, come, welcome. They would probably say, no, you don't belong here. You're not as open-minded as us. I think in that way, it's pretty consistent there too. It's just that the ideology may be more accepting of different kinds of things, but at the end of the day, when somebody fundamentally has a deep disagreement, I think even in the world, you can experience not being welcomed. And the second thing I would say is this, I think the Bible calls us to much more than tolerance. I think the Bible calls us to love. Love is a much higher standard than tolerance. And if you think about this idea of tolerance, it's not a very glorious idea. It's actually a very low ceiling. And it basically says this, all I have to do is not reject you, but I don't have to love you. I don't have to adjust to you. I don't have to inconvenience myself for you. But a community that is shaped by the gospel, there's a higher standard. Because it says this, when it calls us to welcome one another, it says, even though we have differences, it calls me to adjust to you. It calls me to put myself and inconvenience myself for you and to make myself uncomfortable for you. There's actually a sense in which I should long for your flourishing more than mine. And I think that's a beautiful thing, but I also think at the same time that is a more difficult thing. But once we become that kind of community, I think that's when we really become the community that God calls us to be. Second question, so who has the obligation then to welcome? Now that might sound like a strange question because in one sense you could just say this, well, everybody should welcome, right? But if you look at this passage, Paul puts the obligation on a specific group of people. And he says in 15:1, he says, we who are strong have an obligation to bear with the failings of the weak and not to please ourselves. You first notice that Paul is not saying that the strong can't make any negative evaluations. He's not saying you should just agree to disagree. No, in calling them weak, Paul is pointing out something that is weak about them and making a negative evaluation about these Jewish Christians who are still fixated on their dietary restrictions. But second, notice this, that the obligation to welcome is placed upon the strong in faith. Now, scholars say that under Claudius, Jews were banished from Rome in 49 AD, as I mentioned before, and they would only return in 54 AD. And you know what that means? That probably means the majority of the church in Rome was probably made up of Gentile Christians, not Jewish Christians. Jewish Christians were probably in the minority. And therefore, as the majority, it probably would have been easy for them to ignore those in the minority. It would have been easier for them to kind of reject those in the minority and pass judgment upon them and say, hey, you know, what you're doing is wrong. We're going to ignore you. We're not going to care about your needs or where you are. But some Christians may have grown up in an environment where, you know, maybe alcohol is considered wrong. I don't know what people think here, but I think it's okay as long as it's not taken to a point of drunkenness. And some people will say, well, you know, I don't believe alcohol is right at all, and therefore nobody should drink it at all, and it might cause some division. And those who say it's okay, that, you know, the Bible is actually, you know, Jesus drank wine and turned water into wine and blah, blah, blah. I say, you know, I have a better understanding. Those who don't believe in it, maybe they're weaker in faith and those kind of things. And it can be so easy to divide and to judge other people over that and just kind of say, it doesn't make sense. But here's what the principle is here. You know, those who are in the position of a majority, those who are, I guess, those who have maybe more influence, more power, it's actually on you. You have the obligation to be welcoming. Think about it. Does it make sense for an outsider to have to welcome other people? No. Somebody who's an insider, somebody who's a part of the community, someone who's been here for a long time, they have the obligation to welcome somebody. You know, as I look out in here, I know not everybody is Asian here, but the majority here is Asian. If somebody who's a non-Asian comes in here, right, whose obligation is it going to be to welcome? I think it's those of you who fall in the majority. Maybe there's more people here who are married and have families, and maybe some people, there's less people here who are in college. Who has the obligation to welcome? I think those of you in the majority, or it could be vice versa. You know, whatever the principle is, I think if you are the one who finds yourself in the majority, if you are the ones who are part of this community, you actually have the obligation to welcome. At this point, maybe some of you are feeling a little guilty, right? Maybe you feel a little bad because you say, oh man, you know, I haven't been as welcoming as I should have been. But let me also say this. Don't welcome somebody because you feel guilty about it or because you feel bad about it. Because what that ends up doing is then you turn people into a project, and then you begin to welcome not out of love, but simply out of a sense to alleviate your own guilt, and it'll come off very disingenuous. And ultimately, that's very self-serving. But also, that's not going to last, right? That's not going to last. It's not about performing a welcoming act, but it's about being a welcoming people. And that is a level of the heart. It's about transformation of the heart. It's about adjusting to people and receiving people into your community, into your life. And how do we get there? How do we do that? And this is our final point. You know, if you look at 15:3, it says this: For Christ did not please himself, but as it is written, the reproaches of those who reproached you fell on me. And Paul here, he is quoting Psalm 69, which is a psalm that the New Testament writers frequently quote to point to Jesus and his suffering and his death. And the reason that it's fitting that Paul is pointing that to that psalm is this: he's encouraging this community to be welcoming because Jesus Christ first welcomed us. If you remember what I said, what does it mean to be welcoming? It means you adjust to somebody else. What did Jesus do when he was incarnated? He adjusted to us. He became like one of us. What does it mean to be welcoming? Well, it means you inconvenience yourself. It means you give of yourself. What did Jesus do when he died upon the cross? He gave of himself. He died for us. He gave completely of himself. What happened when Jesus died upon the cross? Well, there's something called adoption. And we were all adopted into the family of God. We were all welcomed into the family of God. And you have to realize, who were we, though? We were the weak ones. We were the people filled with sin. We were the people who didn't deserve this kind of love, who didn't deserve to be welcomed. In fact, we were exiled because we were so rebellious and so disobedient. But you see, Jesus, when he dies upon the cross, it's a great act of God's welcome to us. And if that is what we can grasp, if that is something that really touches our hearts, I think that is the key to us becoming a welcoming people. If we can really grasp the dynamics of what happened there, of what God did for us, I think it's the gospel that is ultimately going to change our hearts, that is ultimately going to change this community, and that's ultimately going to be a powerful testimony of God's love in this world. Friends, let's not underestimate the power of welcome, particularly as it comes to being a people in mission, particularly if we want to be a light in the very community that God calls us to be in. And, let's also not do this. My church tends to do this, kind of say, oh, you know, we're not the kind of church for this person. But I think even that's antithetical to the gospel. I think any person can be a part of any church as long as the church overextends themselves in welcome for all. And that's a high calling for sure. But I think we have the power and the resources to do it because we've experienced it from Christ. Let's pray together.